Hello and welcome to Heart Yoga Radio. It's a bit windy down here in the woods, but hopefully it won't be too distracting for the recording. It's quite a pleasant sound actually. I love the sound of the wind and the leaves. It is the 7th of September today, and when I came down for breakfast, Pete was striding about the kitchen, quite animated and in quite a heated mood, and I asked him what it was that was the problem, but what was going on. And he said he'd been listening to the radio to an interview with Tony Blair. So why don't you fill the listeners in? What was the interview about, and why was it so irritating?
This was the main headline on the news on Radio 4 this morning, starting at 6 o'clock or 5:30, whenever it was I woke up and turned the radio on. And they kind of kept repeating it. And it was that Tony Blair had been interviewed by one of the BBC journalists, and that it had gone out on a fairly lengthy podcast apparently. But there was a segment of this that was being put out on the news on an hourly basis. And it was basically an interview with Tony Blair, and Tony Blair says that the Labour Party, he doesn't think that it can be rescued from the Corbynistas. And they're a moderate Labour Party, might be unrecoverable, unsavable. I don't know what the exact words were off the top of my head, but that was the gist of it.
Wow.
And I was thinking, why the fuck are they wheeling him in? And why is it news that he's got an opinion? And why is it like the headline news? You think, well, propaganda.
Exactly. Wasn't he a war criminal or something? what's he doing on there?
Well, you could see, I suppose, how they would justify wheeling him in, because he was the Prime Minister for 3 terms, and that might be a record, you know. He won 3 elections, got in on a landslide when the I'm trying to think which government it was that collapsed. It was the Major government, wasn't it? Which was in a kind of pretty dire straits. You know, it was pretty well. Thatcherism fizzled after. Mrs. Thatcher was in for 11 years, and then it fizzled. She was knifed by her own party, by was it Geoffrey Howe? Somebody described Geoffrey Howe's performances in the Commons as like being savaged by a dead sheep, because he's a very, very low key kind of guy. I forgot the right name there. I think it was Geoffrey. Anyway, Mrs. Thatcher was deposed by her own party. They felt that the tide in the country was just inching a little bit leftward from the kind of extreme neoliberalism, really, of Margaret Thatcher. And John Major had a turn. And it was like these things have a season, and they fizzle. You know, there's energy at the beginning, and then it runs out, and then there's a kind of a period of limping along. Anyway, Tony Blair, for whichever Tony Blair got elected on a landslide as under this rubric New Labour. And New Labour was really Tory light, I would say, and pretty well committed to neoliberalism. It's capitalism with a human face, and I never liked it. And they did a few things. They changed the Labour Party constitution and removed the clause that committed the Labour Party to the public ownership of the means of production. They removed that. I think they got rid of union bloc votes. And there's a case for that, maybe. But it was basically a lurch to the right, and sort of a covert but real commitment to the neoliberal project that had been ushered in by Thatcher and Reagan. Under the cover story supplied by economists like Milton Friedman and Friedrich Hayek, from the, in my opinion, malignant Chicago School of Economics. Tony Blair, you'll recall, took the country to a war with Iraq in alliance with George Bush. Obviously the British contribution to that was small compared with the American contribution, but nevertheless they gave George Bush that kind of moral support, and British troops went there and died there, and probably getting up towards 1 million Iraqi civilians were killed in that war. It went on for years and it devastated the country, and it was done with the excuse that Saddam Hussein had got weapons of mass destruction. It turns out the country was scoured once the troops were in there, and there were no weapons of mass destruction. It was a false flag to enable them to go in, basically capture Iraqi oil. I think Saddam Hussein made the fatal mistake of saying he wasn't going to trade oil in petrodollars anymore. People who take that stance generally meet a sticky end at the hands of the US military industrial complex. So Blair's got blood on his hands. A lot of people refer to him as Tony Blair, war criminal. He definitely deflected the Labour Party from its roots and made it basically into a kind of capitalist with a human face type outfit. But nevertheless, he was able to get a landslide. He did something that appealed to the British people. Now, whether that was just reaction to a decade and more of Thatcherism or what, I mean, I will admit to voting for him, just as like the lesser of evils, you know. Especially as we live in a marginal seat, which kind of flip flops between Labour and Tory, and we seem to have, when we do get Tory ones, they seem to be particularly right wing buggers. I mean, our constituency was held by Enoch Powell, and then the guy who followed him, a lawyer, he got some kind of, I don't know, blood curdling opinions about race and stuff. So, you know, strategic voting, but nevertheless, I'm never bloody enamoured of Tony Blair. Anyway. He's basically going on the speaking circuit now, trash talking Jeremy Corbyn.
I think he's being paid to do that.
No. But do bear in mind that this is a bloke whose foundation took $9 million from the Saudis. You know, and he hobnobs. He's just come back from a seminar with this extreme.
Nine.
Just come back from meetings with that Italian politician, extreme right-wing politician. He obnobs with these people, but he thinks that Jeremy Corbyn's some kind of extremist. Oh. This is a man that took the country to war, to a completely illegitimate war. 1 million people marched on the streets against that war, and they still did it. You know, and I think that reveals the mentality of the man. Really, he's a part of the establishment, and what he really doesn't like about the Corbyn movement is that it's a grassroots movement. Nowhere in any of this interview, at least that I heard, was there any mention that Corbyn was elected twice as leader. You know, he was challenged, and he submitted to the membership twice, got elected twice, good majorities. And has presided over the biggest growth of a grassroots party in a long time. This is the biggest grassroots party in Europe. But Blair's not going to mention that because he's not that type of politician. He's somebody who aspires to autocracy, at least in some part of his being. So here we've got this guy who's been out of office for ages, popping up and talking about taking back Labour for the moderates. You know, as though that was some kind of a right, just automatically presuming that right's on his side when he says that. Ignoring the fact that hundreds of thousands of people have joined the Labour Party or become associates and given it some money to support Jeremy Corbyn and his agenda.
Including us.
Including us, yeah. And you'd think the way they're talking that he's some kind of like Bolshevik, you know. In the scheme of things, what he's proposing is sort of quite moderate.
Yeah. You know. The smear campaign against Jeremy Corbyn is completely ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, well, I want to ask why, you know, why have they wheeled Tony Blair out and given his opinion? It's not like some item of news, like there was an explosion in West Bromwich or something. It's the opinion of a bloke. Okay, he was a Prime Minister some years ago, and he's not popular as a figure, I don't think, because of the
killing a million people.
The fact that it's now in the public domain that there were no weapons of mass destruction and that it was a false flag. And Tony Blair actually has gone on TV looking all contrite and haunted and wringing his hands about how he didn't know that the intelligence people misinformed him or whatever. Actually, the guy behind that was Mueller, this Robert Mueller, who, and it's an unfortunate thing because Mueller is trying to get the dirt on Trump. He's heading up the Mueller Commission in the US. Get the dirt on Trump and all the stuff with the Russians and blah, 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 blah. But of course, Mueller has got a question mark over him because he was the person that was pushing for a war against Iraq on the basis that there were weapons of mass destruction. So that at least two countries already in possession of weapons of mass destruction, namely hydrogen bombs on rockets, i.e. the UK and the USA. USA has got thousands and thousands of them. And the British have got a few, and they've had it since the 1950s, because British scientists were at Los Alamos in that scientific community which developed the bomb, and which then got dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. So weapons of mass destruction, well, it's all right as long as Arabs don't have them. You know, I prefer it if nobody had them.
Well, yes.
You know.
This would be preferable.
Anyway, that's a kind of a side trip, but it nevertheless gives us a bit of context there, I think. So yeah, why do the big wheel him out and sycophantically get him to really have a crap on the Corbyn project? Mm. You know, this is hard on the heels of all the anti-Semitism shit, which to my mind is just a dirty,
dirty fucking. Just for those who perhaps haven't been keeping up with that, just dirty explain tricks. That one.
Well,
thank you.
All right.
Because that's one of the completely ridiculous things that I was just mentioning there. Just briefly recap that for those people who don't know.
There's a concerted campaign to smear Corbyn, and which has entailed things like going back years and years, and things like Corbyn spoke to people in the IRA and he spoke to Palestinian and liberation type people and blah blah blah. But okay, he consorts with terrorists. And he's a bloke, he's a fucking peacenik. He's not a total pacifist, but he is a peacenik, and he's always taken the view that you speak to people. You know, wars don't end until people get round the table.
Yeah.
Even World War II, which was a kind of total crushing of Nazism, they still have to get Admiral Dönitz to come and sign the surrender. You know, there's a point where you get round the table.
Be an agreement.
Yeah. You have to get around the table. And I think Jeremy Corbyn has been as near impeccable on this matter as you can be. But they're digging for dirt in desperation, really. And I'll tell you for why in a minute. And that'll be the point of this discussion. But one of the things that they raked up was that they said there's anti-Semitism in the Labour Party. Now, I would think there probably is a bit. I think anti-Semitism is going to be found in all walks of life and all strata of society and all political parties, probably. Now, Labour is committed, as a matter of principle, to equality, you know, and anti-discrimination on the grounds of sex, gender, whatever you call it, race, ethnicity, religion, and all of that. And there are Muslims in the Labour Party, there are Jews in the Labour Party, there are atheists in the Labour Party. It is a broad church. But there's going to be, I'm not going to say that there hasn't been some, or there isn't some. There's also a lot of support for the Palestinians in the Labour Party. Jeremy Corbyn has always been a supporter of Palestine and of the plight of the Palestinians, whose lives have basically been wrecked in very many instances by the State of Israel. Now, obviously, Israel has various governments. It has left-wing governments, it has right-wing governments. They're not all the same. There's plenty of Israelis don't like what its government does to the Palestinians and who are pro-Palestinian. Plenty of Jewish people who are pro-Palestinian and are trying to do something about their plight. But nevertheless, there is a tendency to say that if you question the actions of the Israeli state, that you're an anti-Semite. Now, obviously, this is a card played by certain elements, certain Israeli nationalist elements, you might call it, in order to silence discussion around the plight of the Palestinians, which is a dire one by any standards. So, you've got to bear in mind that that's an issue. Anyway, the whole debate got rather heated, and what it focused around was, first of all, there were complaints that there was anti-Semitism in the Labour Party. The Labour Party said it would do something about it, and it was after procedures. And they expelled people who were openly anti-Semitic. It's very cumbersome. And this was then pointed out. So they committed to kind of streamlining it and improving it. And there was then pressure to adopt a definition of anti-Semitism, which is adopted pretty well worldwide by companies, governments, maybe I think the UN, political parties and so on. And it's called the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance, IHRA. And they've got like a long definition of anti-Semitism with examples. So the Labour Party decided to consider that. And they said, yes, we'll adopt the IHRA, but not all of the examples given. Because there was one example that could be construed as playing this, if you criticise Israel, you're an anti-Semite card, thereby placing Israel beyond criticism. Now, it's debatable whether that particular item does that or not. There was a lot of complaints, particularly by Jewish organisations in the UK, particularly the Board of Deputies. But bear in mind that, you know, Judaism's a broad church. It's got many strands and Jews belong to all kinds of political persuasions. But nevertheless, they've kind of played it for everything. And it's gone on and on and on and on and on. And every attempt has been made to make Jeremy Corbyn appear to be an anti-Semite. I mean, it's utterly ridiculous. The man ain't got a racist bone in his body. But he is alert to the fact that you need to be able to criticise the state of Israel. And he's alert to that fact. And so he should be. And so there's been a lot of to-ing and fro-ing about that. And now the latest news is that the Labour Party, probably because they want to put this to bed, has adopted the IHRA in its entirety, including the one questionable example. But there's still a lot of fuss going on because they, in their statement, the Labour Party put a caveat to say that criticism of the state of Israel isn't necessarily anti-Semitic, and they want the right to free speech on that matter. So that's sort of not proved good enough, you know. But I think there's a load of clutching at straws going on here, because basically the real agenda is to do another poop on the Corbyn project. So we've got Tony Blair being wheeled out to do a poop on the Corbyn project. The news media giving huge prominence to this argument over about three words in a fucking clause. And it's gone on and on and on, and it's deflected debate and time and energy from all the things that really need fucking thinking about. There's no way, if we have a Labour government, the next first thing they're going to do is start building concentration camps. You know, but to hear some of them talk, you'd think that was it. Now, I watched a clip of Gerald Kaufman, who was a Labour grandee way back, and he's held various high offices of state in Labour governments. A very kind of sober, deep-thinking politician. And you can get on YouTube, you can get a clip of Kaufman speaking in the House of Commons. And Kaufman stood up and said, I was raised an Orthodox Jew and a Zionist. Zionist is somebody who believes in the right of the Jews to have the homeland. Yeah? By his parents. He said, my parents came to this country to escape the Nazis. And they were in the Warsaw ghetto at some point in the family. And he said his grandmother was in a house that was raided by the SS, and she was a frail old lady in bed, and they shot her in bed.
Wow.
And he's telling this story in the House of Commons.
Oh.
And he said this then. He said, my grandmother didn't fucking take a bullet so that a Palestinian grandmother can take a bullet.
Yeah.
Administered by the Israeli state. He said that, and he's, you know, an Orthodox Jew, raised as a Zionist, a Labour politician, very sober. You know, he was one of those politicians that you can fucking respect just for just his kind of solidity.
Yeah.
You know, he was one of them, and he said that, you know. So you've got to be able to have this ability to criticise regimes. Whatever.
Of course you do, yeah.
Whatever, you know. Yeah. So, but as I said, the way some of them were talking, you'd think Jeremy Corbyn was drawing up plans in a secret bunker for fucking gas chambers, you know. And he's utter bollocks. And that is a problem with commitments to equality, for instance, such that it's pretty central to the Labour Party's agenda, and always has been, in that you can always weaponise it in the opposite direction. And I've spoke about this in a podcast about equality and freedom and so forth. fact is, you use freedom to take away freedom, to take away somebody's freedom. You can use the pressure for equality to remove equality. And there's this kind of self-destructive possibility within these great goods of freedom, equality, fraternity. They do contain the possibility of their own reversal. And it's a real problem that hardly anybody seems alert to, from what I say. And because we're not alert to it, the media can jump on it and start fucking shitting over projects like Jeremy Corbyn's, or like the, you know, the project of this grassroots Labour Party that's grown up over the last couple of years. Now, I think why they wheel Tony Blair out, and why the anti-Semitism debate has just turned into this brawl, unseemly brawl, which the right-wing press, which is basically the press, you know, the British press is owned by four billionaires, you know, and the BBC is a wing of the state. So, they've seized upon it. And you think, well, what's going on here? What's going on here? Well, actually, there is absolute terror that Corbyn might get in on the part of the establishment and on the part of neoliberals. Because it is a project, unlike Blair's project, that carries the possibility of finally breaking the stranglehold of neoliberalism on our society. And it's a malignant stranglehold. You know, you've had 10 years of fucking austerity. And bear in mind that the UK is a Security Council country. It's the fifth or sixth largest economy in the world. It's got a lot of clout in geopolitically, comparative to many countries of similar size or greater size. And that this could be the beginning of a domino effect. If Corbyn got in, say the snap election and Corbyn got in, this would be immense encouragement to, I know, Justice Democrats, for instance, in the US. They give Bernie Sanders a fighting chance, and so on. There could be a domino effect, not necessarily so, but there could be. And I think this is why there's such a concerted effort on the part of the establishment, which basically speaks for neoliberalism, to shit all over that project by any means necessary. Dirty tricks, dirtier the better. They don't care. I just got to stop it at all costs. So that's pretty well in summary what I think's going on there. And I went and had a look on Twitter after, like, hashtag BBC.
Oh, yeah, you did a bit of a Twitter storm, didn't you?
BBC right, Radio 4. And then they brought Owen Jones on at 9 o'clock to 4 or half past 8 or something. And somebody else, some kind of shill, and somebody else with a slightly more centrist view, you might say. And I don't know, it was pretty shambolic. I think Owen Jones actually spoke well. The verdict on Twitter seemed to be that the BBC are just propagandists, and there wasn't much love for Tony Blair and loads of love for Jeremy Corbyn. You know, there's the odd thing.
In the comments.
Yeah, I just read through. There's hundreds and hundreds of comments. There's a whole kind of Twitter storm around it. Yeah, I put my two pennies worth in. Basically summarising in however many characters they let you have what I've just said to you. And I think they will. I kind of put this a remark on a YouTube channel about 3 weeks ago saying, well, just watch out, you're going to get it, you know, once this once the anti-Semitism thing fizzles out, there'll be a load of other things. It's funny how Boris's burqa thing didn't last 5 minutes, did he?
Yeah.
I think Tony Blair's right out of touch, you know. And as I said, nobody mentioned this absolute massive increase in membership to have this huge grassroots party. I actually had a correspondence with our local MP, who was a Blairite. He stood down at the beginning of the last election campaign, and a new Labour person came forward, a black theatre nurse who'd been a Unison organiser, a union organiser, got in, and our lawyer Blairite stepped down. But I had a correspondence with him when he was the Labour MP during the time of Corbyn having his election battles, and this guy was one of the ones that really didn't want Corbyn in. And he sent me like a 10-page thesis, you know, on this stuff. But the gist of his argument was that a social movement's not a political party. You know, it's not politics. Politics is about going and getting the levers of power. And I kind of...
What?
You know, so this is a view, I think, of those in the Parliamentary Labour Party, which there are quite a number, who really don't like the Corbyn phenomenon. And I didn't bother to reply, but I was thinking, actually, you know, we need real grassroots politics. My desideratum would be that over time, that these levers of power get dismantled because they are skewed in favour of capital and the already privileged. And the point of grassroots politics would be eventually, hopefully peacefully, to do that. But these guys who live in the Westminster bubble, they don't see any value in it whatsoever. But then they wonder why people are alienated from politics and you can't get them interested in it. Because pretty well everybody perceives, who's got more than 3 brain cells working, that the whole thing's a fucking fix and a setup anyway. I mean, the old anarchist adage, you know, doesn't matter who you vote for, the government always wins. I mean, on that basis, I would foresee, if Jeremy Corbyn gets in as Prime Minister with a reasonable majority, he's going to have a right hard time, because he's just going to walk into a system where there's an established, permanent civil service, which has got a particular kind of class bias and demographic makeup. And now they're trying to do sort of stuff to make them look better in that respect, but nevertheless, it's a permanent civil service. So, you know, they've got a lot of clout, and they actually know how the shit works. And they've got 1,000 ways from deflecting you from doing things that you might well have been elected to do. So I'm not expecting that he'd get an easy ride. I mean, if the guy gets in, and Brexit has just happened, and there's a kind of a no-deal Brexit, and I don't care what these kind of business wallers say, there's going to be a lot of chaos, at least to start with customs and so forth. And if it's going to be painless, why is the government stockpiling medicines and certain foodstuffs? So if Labour inherits that, and they're simultaneously trying to bring in a programme of taking certain core industries into public ownership, that's going to be a right circus. I'd still vote for him. I think whoever gets in is going to fuck up in some ways. But Boris Johnson, no thanks. Some reincarnation of Tony Blair, no thanks. There is talk about these sort of Blairites and similar shaving off and forming a new party, a la SDP and the Gang of Four. But of course, they didn't last very long. They went pretty well defunct and then they had to get absorbed by the Liberals, which became then the Liberal Democrats. When it was thought that Labour was lurching to the left under Michael Foot. You got this trope, actually, you know, if Labour actually tries to do anything vaguely socialist, that they become unelectable. Not quite true. I think in 19... whenever it was, just after the war, the Attlee government did a load of things which are quite similar to what Corbyn is proposing. But of course you'd got a radicalised workforce of ex-troops who just fought a six-year world war. Anyway, thank you all for listening. Speak to you soon.